Stress, whether real or imagined, is a natural response to life's challenges. On today's podcast, we're going to learn about stress, how your body reacts to stress, the good and the bad, and how to handle and respond to stress in a way that is both beneficial and healthy. Welcome to Airwaves, the official podcast of the Naval Air Systems Command. I'm your host, Michael Lauren Prue, and joining me today is Captain Tara Smith, Navy Clinical Psychologist with the Medical Service Corps, and Lieutenant Commander Patrick Baker, Navy Clinical Social Worker at the Navy Medicine and Readiness Training Command. Thank you both for joining us. All right, so let's begin today's podcast with just that basic definition. What is stress, and what are some of the major causes of stress?
So I will give my definition of stress through a compilation of resources. It is the process by which we respond to a perceived challenge of the body, mind, or spirit. And there are two very important things to note in that definition. The process by which we respond. We all respond to any given stressor at any given time in our own way. And more importantly, we control how we respond. And we should never give that control up or to anyone else. And our response is shaped by our perspective. And that perspective is influenced by where we were raised, how we were raised, the neighborhoods we grew up in, the schools that we went to. Everything that we've experienced in life shapes the lens at which we view life through, and more importantly, at times receive information through. And those experiences will shape how we respond. So it's important throughout the course of our life, through a course of inevitable life stress, to polish that lens. It's going to be filled with bumps, blemishes, and cracks, and through our own introspection and reflection, peer support, utilization of resources otherwise, it is important to polish that lens as much as possible to ensure that we are giving ourselves the best chance to respond to stress effectively in the most clear way, free of any conscious or unconscious bias or things that may be holding us back otherwise.
Wow. I will start by saying I'm stressed already. Because you are the most professional radio voice I've ever heard, and I did not realize you were going to be that dynamic and impressive. And then I have Lieutenant Commander Baker over here giving the Encyclopedia Britannica definition of stress. So now I'm stressed. So the bar is so high. So I'll start by saying stress is necessary. Stress is necessary in life. And I think one of the directions we've gone in our society over the last, I'm 51 years old. Over the course of my lifetime, I've seen our relationship to stress change. My mother's favorite TED talk was "Life Ain't Fair." And we seem to have progressed from that perspective to life should be fair. I'm entitled to a fair life. I don't want a life that isn't fair. Stress is necessary. It is absolutely important that we are challenged so that we can grow. We don't tell toddlers, you've been crawling long enough, but I don't think you should try to walk because that's just too stressful. You don't need to grow and change. Keep crawling. That's enough for life. We don't go to the gym and say, I can bench press 50-pound dumbbells. I don't think I need to push my body any further. I think that's enough growth, right? In all aspects of life, we need to be challenged so that we can grow and get stronger. We are supposed to experience stress. That stress should not overwhelm you, should not consume you. It should challenge you to do some problem solving. It should challenge you to build more social connections and look for mentors and support. The biggest problem with stress is our inability to tolerate stress, that we think we're not supposed to be stressed. Everyone's supposed to have stress. That's it. That's my definition.
So my mother used to say, "This too shall pass." And my whole thought was she would say that, and I was like, okay, you're right. But right now, I'm just really stressed. So let's talk about the things that we might be feeling when we're stressed. How does your body react to stress? What are some of the physical or mental effects of stress?
I appreciate the mantra that this too shall pass. I think of it often myself. I share it with patients, but it doesn't just pass on its own. It takes action-oriented steps. Agree with the sentiment that stress oftentimes is our friend, but often misperceived as the enemy. It's a physiological response that's designed to help us rise to the occasion. So you'll feel all sorts of things, whether it's an increase in heart rate, sharper attention and focus. You often get the bubble guts. Those things are evolutionary in nature. They're purposeful. They are designed to help us rise to the occasion and respond to that perceived challenge effectively, give us the ability to push beyond things. However, we often interpret it as a negative feeling, that it's something bad. And that is where I think we as a culture and society, as Captain Smith said, are making stress out to be more the enemy when it really, in a lot of cases, can be your friend.
So one of my favorite middle school teachers used to tell us when we were in school and complaining, she would say, "I never promised you a rose garden." And as a middle school student, I had no idea what that reference was until I was much older and realized it was a movie. But her sentiment was, no one ever promised you things would be easy, right? You're supposed to just embrace what is and strive to overcome it. I liken that to a Buddhist perspective that suffering is part of living, but how you relate to that suffering determines how you overcome it. So if we have a mindset that I should not be suffering, we're going to suffer more. So I'm taking more of a cognitive approach to this. Yes, you're going to have physiological responses to stress. That's usually your first warning sign that you're stressed out. When you go for a run, your heart rate increases, your muscles may tighten. All these things are your body's way of telling you that you're stressed. But mentally, what you say to yourself during the stress impacts how the stress continues, how it affects you. And so, you know, if you have this mindset that I don't want to feel stressed, I don't want to be unhappy, I don't want to feel any of the negative emotions, right? We think of emotions like a switchboard, and I want to turn off all the negative emotions, turn on all the positive emotions. That is not realistic. We have to just accept what is. And that attitude, if you can embrace what is, we have sayings like it is what it is, embrace the suck. Sometimes that allows you to go from suffering to having a problem-solving approach or a growth mindset. So from a cognitive perspective, not viewing stress as something you don't want to or shouldn't have to feel, but what is this opportunity that this stress presents? Everything stressful is an opportunity to overcome or to learn more about yourself.
Absolutely. And I don't know if y'all are like me, but sometimes when I'm the most stressed is when I'm the most productive all at the same time. So speaking of changing that mindset and rising to the occasion, how can I use stress to my advantage?
I'll start off by saying stress sometimes prompts us to step outside of our comfort zone, seek expertise, seek education. So there is not a person in the military or a person on earth who has never encountered stress. Your first ship, your first squadron, your first job, there's stress. There's a learning curve, there's new people, there's different challenges at your job. And that's an opportunity for you to find new people to guide you and mentor you, a great opportunity to brush up on your skills and study some more. So it can just push you outside of your comfort zone where you think, I've got this, I know it all, to how can I learn more? I'm going to have to seek more resources, seek more guidance, build those social skills, allow people to help you. We're all terrible at that. We're all terrible at letting someone else help us. So stress presents an opportunity to let others take care of you.
Yeah, I think what Captain Smith is talking about is connection. We talk about inclusion all the time, but I think the better word to describe all that is belonging. We need an individual or group of individuals with whom to share our stress with. If there are any Ted Lasso fans out there, it's a great show. And there's a great quote after a loss where it's, I'll paraphrase, there's something worse out there than being sad, and that's being alone and being sad. And from my perspective, the beauty of being part of the Navy and Marine Corps team, the DOD at large, affiliated or alongside with, we don't have to do any of this stuff alone. And when we drive connection, when we seek that belonging, we take the opportunity to not only help ourselves, but help each other.
So I think that kind of leads into my next question. How do we best communicate that we're stressed? And how can we get others to communicate that they're stressed? What's the best way of doing that?
We have to create a community where it's okay to talk about it. And part of the military culture is this, we're tough, we suck it up. I was just telling a coworker the other day, when I came in the Navy, my supervisor told me, if you are not projectile vomiting or dead, you will bring your ASS to work. And for 25 years, I have not missed a day of work. And I would never do that to my coworkers. I want them to stay home if they're sick. I want them to be safe. But that stuck with me, that we did not have a culture that allowed you to be a human being and be sick, right? And so I think we as leaders have an obligation to create that environment where it's okay to be a human being and stop perpetuating this myth that we're somehow superhuman. We are the greatest military on the earth. We are superior. We have all these warfighter capabilities. It still takes human beings to make it work, and we have to be okay mentally and physically and socially and spiritually. And we can't do that by denying how we're feeling. We need a safe place to open up. We as leaders have to create that environment. And so that's on us as an older generation to change that narrative. But not change it in such a way that we say, when you're stressed, when you're having a bad day, it's a crisis, it's an emergency, you can't function, you're never going to recover, but that this is part of the human experience.
There was mention of a quote unquote safe space, which can be a very controversial term in today's world, in the DOD especially. I think we're striving to get towards is a culture of psychological safety. which is one of the most misconceived terms and ideas and concepts around, in my opinion. It's often thought of to be a safe space, a quiet room, puppies, rainbows, and butterflies, right? But that is the furthest thing from the truth. I mean, I listened to something recently from Adam Grant, organizational psychologist, and he describes it as high candor, low fear, the ability to talk open and honestly about any ideas, whether it's personal, interpersonal, work-related, the ability to promote and discuss half-baked ideas without fear of reprisal, humiliation, or anything of that nature. The ability to talk openly in an effort to drive higher performance teams, whether it's to help each other personally or achieve mission success.
I think another thing relatable to stress that often we hear in the workplace is burnout. What's the difference between feeling stress and feeling burnout?
It's a great question. I think it's a problem that a lot of us face, especially in the healthcare world. I'll use an analogy of the climate versus the weather. I think, you know, everyone has a rainy day, everyone has tough days. I think that's an indication of stress. It's temporary madness. It's an opportunity to work through things, work around things in an effort to help you and help others around you. I think when you start to get into concepts of burnout or even just psychological illness, it's more the climate, right? It's raining every day. It's a hurricane. It's a tornado. That is when you start to creep into elements of burnout and compassion fatigue and other illnesses of that sort.
I think that's a fantastic answer, and I'm glad I get to work with the Encyclopedia Britannica here because you're so articulate. I was going to talk about the chronicity of it. I've got 25 years in the Navy. I'm absolutely burned out, and it's just the accumulation of stress without much of a break. And it does start to affect your desire to go into work, your desire to give to others, your ability to give to others. And I think in the military, and I'm sure for the civilians who support the military, we have adapted to so much stress that we don't even realize the toll it's taken on us. It's like boiling a frog in water. And if you just slowly boil the frog and increase the temperature, the frog doesn't know it's being boiled to death. I have known many, many friends who died within a year of retirement. And that breaks my heart and it scares me because we don't even realize the toll that the chronic stress is taking on us because we're just so good at it. We thrive in this environment. We pride ourselves on being able to do the impossible. And so I think it's on those small unit leaders, those individual supervisors and the peers to look out for one another and say, hey, I'll take the watch this weekend. You need rest. You need time with your family because the machine doesn't stop. It's like being on a ship. It never sleeps. There's always got to be somebody on watch. Someone's always got to be awake. But how do you and your small organizations and your small units and teams take notice of how each other are doing and give each other that time and that space to say, I'm human and I need a break. The machine will not give you a break. And so it really comes down to controlling what you control, which is your individual supervisor, your individual peers that can say, hey, I've noticed you're not okay. Do you notice you're not okay? Because we lack that self-awareness. We're superwomen, supermen. We know we can suck it up if we have to. Should I right now? Should I really take a knee, even though I know I could keep pushing? That self-awareness is critical with burnout.
I think what you're saying is so important. I mean, that awareness is so key. I know for me personally, when I'm really stressed, I have to go back and say, all right, what is really stressing you out? What do you have the ability to control? So when we are stressed or pushing towards burnout, what are some things we can do to identify maybe those triggers to our stress and what can we do about them?
I think the first thing we have to do is slow the heck down. I mean, we are in the information and technology age. We are bombarded with information on a regular basis. And if we don't create an opportunity to slow down and recognize signs, symptoms, we're going to fight an uphill battle. For me, and what Captain Smith Ray started to talk about, it starts with the way that we think about things. I heard a great quote. I forget where, so I can't give appropriate credit, but thoughts are like waves in the ocean. You can't stop them from coming, but you can choose which ones you want to surf. You can't stop the ideas or the thoughts, but you choose what you focus on. You choose what you dwell on, because what you focus on is what you'll feel. What you'll feel is what you'll do, and what you'll do is who you become. But none of that occurs unless you take the opportunity to take a step back and slow down. So you really have to be mindful in those moments of stress when you have that temporary madness or you're frustrated by a situation. It's realizing that those feelings may be perfectly appropriate, but it's what you do with them that counts. To me, there's a big difference between reacting and responding. If you react, it implies there's no impulse control. It's not based in thought. It's too fast, right? Whereas if we respond, it's more thoughtful. It's a little bit slow, more tactical. And I'm not talking about a significant amount of time here. But for me, it all starts with how you immediately think about a problem set. And we need to slow down and realize what those automatic, oftentimes subconscious thoughts are, that are programmed by everything we've experienced in life.
I will say that having those habits at the ready that you've honed and you maintain no matter what is going to sustain you through some of the roughest periods, right? So I'm a very basic human being. I know that if I'm not eating right, if I'm not exercising, if I'm not focusing on quality sleep, if I am not spending time with people who fill my cup and give me that social support, I'm not going to weather the storm very well. So all of us have to be experts in listening to our bodies and taking care of our bodies and maintaining those basics. Because sometimes the mission is what it is. Sometimes you've just got a lot going on and there's nothing you could do but face it. And so at least having those habits dialed in is going to get you through those rough times. Sort of like when you have a new baby, you're just in for it. You're just going to lose sleep. You're going to be stressed out. And all you can do is just breathe and give yourself grace. But if the rest of the time you're able to focus on your nutrition, your sleep, your exercise, having that social support, you're going to weather it just fine. But the other thing is, as Lieutenant Commander Baker said, slowing down and being more responsive rather than reactive. I know for me, one of my primary stress control things is exercise. I love to exercise. However, when I am really, really burned out and I continue to exercise more and more, that extra cortisol is not helping me. And sometimes I've seen the effects of that after I've done the damage. And so as I've gotten older, I've had to really be more thoughtful about, is this the right time to go for a long run? Or is this the right time for a yoga workout? Because if I increase my cortisol at this time, I'm doing more harm than good. So we've got to work smarter, not harder, when it comes to dealing with our stressors. There's a time and a place for everything. What's the right thing for right now? Not just your regular go-to.
I think I appreciate the fact that you still do something, right? You may not go for a 10-mile run, but you're still going to do something to maintain yourself. You know, the thing that often baffles me, and I've asked this in briefs, is, you know, hypothetically, if I was on fire, we all know that I would stop, drop, and roll, right? But if you ask people what their immediate response to stress is, what do they do in the moment? They have a hard time answering that question. How likely am I to be on fire versus how likely am I to be under stress in any given day? So we really need to be mindful and think about what it is that we do, what our immediate reactions are, alongside what that preventive maintenance piece is, what you do to take care of yourself on a longer term basis, and what is appropriate at each time.
You know, I can perfectly relate to your I exercise for your health. I'm a big exercise person too, especially in periods of stress. So speaking of ways to, I would say, combat stress, what are some self-care tips that you have?
I set boundaries. I am always that person that wants to take care of others, help others. And there are times when that has bitten me in the butt because I'm overextended. And I have got to learn to set more boundaries. And it's hard to say no because I want to do the good things, but it ends up costing me. And so that is something that most of us are really bad at for good reasons. We just have to learn to set boundaries and say, I cannot do that, and then not judge ourselves for not doing it. I'm not a terrible person because I don't want to go out to dinner tonight. I'm 51 years old. When the sun comes up, I'm up. When the sun goes down, I'm turning off my phone. I don't want to hear my doorbell ring. Don't ask me for anything. I don't want to hear family drama on the phone. When it's time to wind down, I need to wind down. And I've set that boundary as I've gotten older because it costs me if I don't.
Yeah, for me, I got to build space, even if it's for short intervals. And I have to admittedly be better at that personally and professionally. The idea of taking 20 minutes here and there just to decompress, allow myself to transition more effectively, I know is helpful. And one of the things that frustrates me with regards to patient care is when patients say, you know, oh, when I exercise, I feel better. When I journal, I feel better. When I do mindfulness, I feel better. Well, then why aren't we doing it more consistently? So we need to practice what we preach in that sense. But for me, it's just a little bit of time and space strategically placed, I think, alongside with boundaries, right? Sometimes in an effort or in order to get space, we need to say no. But I think you have to be mindful of how much space you take, right? It's one thing to take 20 minutes, you hold yourself accountable to that time, and you transition to the next thing. It's another thing to consistently isolate. We've already talked about the idea of connection, and we don't want our coping strategy to be consistent isolation.
And Captain Smith, I want to kind of go back to something you said when you were talking about running, that sometimes that stress can almost add that cortisol and turn into something bad. When can self-care turn into a negative?
That glass of wine at the end of the day turns into 2, 3, or 4 glasses of wine. That fun day at the casino turns into a whole paycheck at the casino. Going to a concert means you're late to work every time you have a concert. Excessive sleeping, you know, instead of sleeping the adequate amount, overeating. anything that's having consequences and you're not paying attention to those consequences. And I will go back to this topic of being burned out. You don't always have time for a workout. I mean, there are times when you just don't have time to do the things you normally do. I recall one day we had 8 meetings back to back at my office and I was miserable. My body hurt. I was stiff. I was achy. I just can't sit that long. I can't focus that long. And it was just one meeting after another. And about the 5th meeting, the staff or a bunch of mental health providers, we sat around and did some deep breathing before the meeting. Like sometimes that's all you can do is squeeze in 5 minutes of breathing, but it allowed us to reset. And so you've got to have the things you can do that are time sensitive and things you could do that take a bit more time, but you got to have a toolkit with a bunch of different things you can do. And if sometimes that's just a few minutes of breathing, if you're on a ship, if you're on deployment and you're just on watch and working all day, maybe all you have that you control is that 5 minutes in your rack before you go to sleep and you just do some breathing, but you have that sense of control and you've got something you did for you. You got to do what you can do. Right now, the leaves are changing colors. When I get home after a long day, I'll just sit on my back deck and just look at the leaves and appreciate nature's beauty. And just that few minutes of a mental reset really transitions my day and allows me to go to bed with a clearer mind. So again, having that wide-ranging set of tools, because you're not always going to have time for a workout. Sometimes it is what it is, right? So we're not trying to say you should never be burned out or never be stressed. Life is real. These are real things that happen. It is what it is sometimes. Do you have your toolkit?
That is a great point, and I think it's easier said than done. It requires some cognitive flexibility. We tend to have a very all or nothing black and white mindset, right? So if I can't get to the gym for an hour as I normally would, I don't do anything. But what Captain Smith is talking about is being a little bit more cognitively adaptable, right? Like the ability to, you know, I can't get there for an hour, but I can do 5 minutes of mindfulness or 2 minutes of push-ups or any other alternative mechanism to do something which is better than nothing.
Now, as we've moved through today's podcast, we've talked about good stress, we've talked about bad stress. Let's talk about chronic stress. What can that do to a person?
In the short term, the stress response is critical. It's very helpful. But when it's released chronically over time, that prolonged cortisol release is what leads to endocrine system issues, inflammation, poor cardiovascular health, and things like that. That is why throughout the course of this podcast, we talk about this whole idea of an immediate action, as well as this ability to take care of yourself over time. You have to open the release valve, right? That's what releases that cortisol. That's what helps regulate those things. The stress response is automatic, but the downregulation response and how you take care of yourself is not. So if you're not opening that release valve, if you don't have a short-term strategy, long-term plans, that's what's going to increase the risk of that chronic stress over time.
And I'd like to add one more thing. We think about stress as the big things. Stress can be the little things too, right? So, you know, you mentioned releasing the valve. All of us should take leave. All of us should take a vacation once in a while and disconnect. Here's the thing. If I take leave, I come back to thousands of emails. And every one of those emails represents stress to me and an increase in cortisol. So the email has become a source of stress. And our bodies, our limbic system, our primate brain, it doesn't separate an email from a saber-toothed tiger. It creates the same stress response physiologically. And so it really is important that we give ourselves that grace. I'm going to go on vacation. I'm not taking my computer. I'm not checking my phone. I will deal with the emails when I get back. But I'm going to allow myself this time to breathe and relax so I can be more effective when I go back. Stress is not just the big things. It can be the little things too. It could be the daily microaggressions, the daily stressors that just really start to break you down after a while. And it's important to have that self-awareness. I need a break and I have to give myself the grace to enjoy it.
100%. So how do we go about building stress resilience?
You let people grow. You let them struggle, but you're there as a safeguard, right? It's okay to be sad. It's okay to have your heart broken. It's okay to fail. It's okay not to advance. It's okay not to make the next rank like you wanted to. It's okay to not pick up command. Life is going to disappoint us. It's okay not to succeed. It's okay. Like, how many shots did Michael Jordan miss? How many times did he fail to make the varsity team? If we continue to communicate a message that failure is the end of everything, we're not going to have a resilient society. Let people feel their emotions and then be there to guide them, help them navigate these feelings instead of saying it's terrible to have feelings. We've got to get back to that in society because we are creating an environment where we've told people it's not okay to struggle. And that does not make people stronger if you don't struggle. So I think about being raised by a single mother, and my mother was Superwoman. She could do anything. I never saw my mother cry, never saw my mother ask for help. My mother was the epitome of the strong Black woman, and that is what she taught me. And so I grew up thinking I had to be that person too. And so as much as my mother was amazing and I thank God for her, she didn't teach me how to be a human being. She taught me how to be Superwoman. And so as I went through life and I experienced struggles, I thought I had to be absolutely as strong as her. Nothing could break me down. Nothing could defeat me. And to some extent, that benefited me. That served me very well because I can endure anything. But that didn't make me the well-rounded individual I really need to be. And so looking at what were your role models for handling stress and evaluating, are those tools still serving me now? Or do I need to gain some more tools? And then look at the people around you. One of the things I've done since I've come in the Navy and even in graduate school, if I saw somebody who was killing it in life and just amazing, I'd walk up to that person and say, you don't know me, but you're my mentor now. Like, I just want to introduce myself. I've now decided you're my mentor. You have just gotten yourself a mentee because you're going to teach me what you know, right? So look at the people around you who are thriving and see what you can learn from them, right? Nobody is the first one to ever go through something. Nobody. Everybody's been through it before. So what can you learn from others? Humble yourself. That was hard for me to humble myself because I had this expectation that I had to be as strong as my mother, not realizing that she may have had other coping skills that I just never saw. But in my mind, I could only be as strong as her. And then don't be afraid to look at Google and listen to podcasts and read books. There are lots of people in the history of the world that have been through similar things. Read, just read.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk through the self-awareness check. I think that's a great idea. I mean, one of the things in my own life and one of the things you see with patients is we, again, through the accumulation of life experience, we tend to cope with things in certain ways, especially as kids, and they probably worked. They largely kept us safe and were very effective, but we're not kids anymore, right? So we cannot continue to rely on the same coping strategies, even though they worked. So taking that time to check in and take a look at what you are doing to deal with stress is incredibly important. As far as resources go, it's always helpful to go up to folks and connect and build relationships and mentor-mentee relationships and relationships otherwise. And as far as the books go, one of the books I recently read that I thought was incredibly helpful for parents with a 14-year-old daughter, me with a 7-year-old daughter who's going on 14, is The Anxious Generation. It is one of the most impactful books I've read in recent years. It talks about the impacts of social media and technology, and it kind of bifurcates time between pre-smartphone and post-smartphone. And I can say after reading that book, I'm so thankful that I grew up in the world that I grew up in the real world, in the physical world, as opposed to what the younger generations are forced to grow up through with this technology infrastructure and the challenges of social media. Otherwise, I think Atomic Habits is great. We talk about this whole idea of self-care and more importantly, consistency in self-care, and Atomic Habits reshaped kind of how I think about what I do. It's moved me away from that whole black and white all or nothing mindset and has forced me to think through other creative ways that I can take care of myself through building habits in a different way. And then a book by Daniel Pink, Drive, How to Motivate Those Who Don't Want to Be Motivated, Autonomy, Mastery, and Purpose. Those are three books that I typically recommend to people. I have no skin in the game or anything like that. Don't make any money, but I just found interesting as a professional.
All right, well, I want to thank both of you for joining us today to talk about stress, how to manage stress, self-care, and what we can all do to be more resilient and improve our mental and physical well-being to live a more healthy and fulfilled life. Of course, if you enjoyed today's conversation, please check out the NAVAIR Airwaves podcast on all your favorite listening apps. We have several other great episodes with health and wellness topics, along with all the other NAVAIR topics. So that's it for this edition of Airwaves. Thanks for listening.